Here's a look at our top stories this hour. The Russian foreign minister warns of, quote, a real danger of a World War III as tensions escalate between Moscow and the West over the war in Ukraine. A senior Palestinian politician says Palestinians not only want an end to the occupation, but also the overthrow of the apartheid and racist Israeli regime. Also, Yemen releases the crew of an Emirati cargo ship, which was seized in early January while carrying military hardware. Thank you for joining us. The Russian foreign minister has warned of, quote, a real danger of a World War III as tensions escalate between Moscow and the West over the war in Ukraine. Sergei Lavrov said the danger of a World War III is serious and cannot be underestimated. His remarks came as the U.S. and its European allies are supplying weapons to help Ukraine resist the Russian offensive. Moscow has warned the West of unpredictable consequences if arming Ukraine continues. Lavrov said peace talks with Ukraine will continue, expressing confidence that the conflict will end with the signing of an accord. He criticized Kyiv's approach to the talks, saying goodwill has its limits and will not help negotiations if it is not reciprocal. Lavrov accused Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky of pretending to negotiate. He said Zelensky is a good actor, but there are, quote, 1,000 contradictions in his remarks. Russia says its missiles have destroyed 6 railway facilities that were used to deliver foreign weapons to Ukraine forces, or Ukrainian forces, I should say, in the Donbass region. The Russian Defense Ministry says its forces also destroyed an arms depot in the Donetsk region, among various other military installations, on Monday. According to Ukrainian officials, Russian airstrikes hit railway stations in the country's western and central regions, killing at least 5 people and injuring 18 others. Ukraine's military command says Moscow was trying to bomb railway infrastructures in order to disrupt arms supplies from foreign countries. Meanwhile, Russia says it has pounded 56 Ukrainian military facilities overnight. Moscow also reports that the Ukrainian army has shelled a village in Russia's Belgorod region. And Russia warns the United States and its allies against supplying more weapons to Ukraine, saying the move is fanning the flames of the war. Russian ambassador to Washington, Anatoly Antonov, says Moscow sees massive deliveries of arms to Ukraine as an attempt to aggravate the situation and bring about more losses. Antonov says Russia has sent an official diplomatic note of concern to Washington regarding the issue, but has received no reply yet. His comments come after the U.S. Secretaries of State and Defense said Washington is prepared to increase its military support for Ukraine.
They need long-range fires. You've heard them express a need for tanks. And we are doing everything that we can to get them the types of support, the types of artillery and munitions that will be effective in this stage of the fight. We're going to push as hard as we can, as quickly as we can, to get them what they need.
What I'm seeing, at least, is that aid is getting here and other distribution points. It's getting out the door incredibly quickly. Again, this place is going to look different 5 or 6 hours from now than it does right now.
Well, upcoming visits, what is the strategy for engaging?
Antony Blinken and Lloyd Austin made the comments near the Ukrainian border in Poland. They also visited Kyiv on Sunday night in the highest-level U.S. visit since the start of the Russian war there. During a meeting with President Volodymyr Zelensky, the two officials cited U.S. President Joe Biden as saying that American diplomats would return to Ukraine as soon as this week. They also pledged more than $700 million in additional direct and indirect military aid. Meanwhile, Britain says it will send Stormer armored vehicles carrying anti-air missile launchers to Kyiv. Defense Secretary Ben Wallace says the U.K. will also seek to provide Ukraine with long-range artillery and ammunition, as well as anti-ship missiles. The EU's executive arm, the European Commission, insists providing deadly weapons to Ukraine is the right thing to do. However, there is growing opposition to the West's policy in this regard over concerns that it will prolong the ongoing conflict with Russia. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
The EU and its Western allies continue to pour hundreds of millions of euro worth of deadly weapons into Ukraine. Speaking in India on Monday, the head of the bloc's executive arm, Ursula von der Leyen, defended this policy.
Our response to Russia's aggression today will decide the future of both the international system and the global economy.
Just last week in the European Parliament, a number of legislators questioned the wisdom of pumping lethal weapons into Ukraine.
If there is a ceasefire, who's going to disarm those individuals who are receiving these arms? We know how weapons sent to fight al-Assad in Syria ended up being used for attacks in other countries.
Also, it's clear many EU citizens are against the enormous militarization of Ukraine by the West.
If you send weapons, maybe you will encourage the conflict.
We all must hope the world need peace.
I think the peace is the best way.
Weapon is not the answer to nothing.
Poverty is on the rise in the EU, and so campaigners say the huge amounts of money being spent on providing weapons for the conflict could be better spent.
People are faced with the COVID crisis, you know, with energy crisis, you know, the bills of people are tripled or even quadrupled. So it's something ununderstandable.
But the European Commission insists the arming of Ukraine is not about prolonging the conflict.
The war can stop today if Russia decides that it should stop. It has nothing to do with the arms deliveries to Ukraine. Ukraine is only defending itself.
However, a growing number of civil society organizations and lawmakers believe the West should be prioritizing peace talks over arms delivery. Otherwise, they suggest, there is no way of ending this conflict. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The cycle of diplomatic expulsions is relentlessly continuing between the West and Russia. In yet another tit-for-tat measure, Moscow has declared 40 German diplomatic staff in Russia persona non grata. In a statement, the Russian Foreign Ministry said it had summoned German ambassador and handed him a note. The ministry said it was a cold, symmetrical response to Berlin's decision to expel 40 Russian diplomats earlier this month. Moscow dismissed allegations by the German foreign minister that Russian diplomats had been working against German freedom and cohesion of society. Germany, however, says the expulsion of its diplomats is in no way justified. Political tensions have been soaring between Moscow and the West since Russia launched a war on Ukraine. The U.S., the EU, and their allies have since expelled hundreds of Russian diplomats, with Moscow responding in kind. A senior Palestinian politician says the so-called two-state solution to Palestinian issue has failed and is not accepted by Palestinians anymore. Mustafa Barghouti, the general secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative, was speaking with Iran's Al Alam Arabic News Network. He said at present, Palestinians not only want an end to the occupation, but also the overthrow of the apartheid and racist Israeli regime across the occupied territories. Barghouti said the cost of occupation and racism is too high for Israel to be able to pay. He added that the resistance has tipped the balance of power in favor of Palestinians and has spread fear and confusion among Zionists. Barghouti emphasized that Palestinians must follow the path of resistance, not negotiations with Israel. He also criticized global inaction on Israeli crimes, asking how so many sanctions can be imposed on Russia in just a few weeks while Israel has remained unpunished during the last 74 years. Iran's ambassador to the United Nations says Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories must end to make way for a resolution of the conflict in Palestine. Majid Taht Ravanchi said full recognition of the inalienable rights of the Palestinian people is also a prerequisite for resolution of the conflict. Iran's UN ambassador said the regime's atrocities against Palestinians amount to war crimes under international law. He criticized the current stance of the UN Security Council on Israel's aggressions, saying it's only emboldened the regime to perpetuate its occupation and atrocities. Taht Ravanchi called on the Security Council to hold Israel accountable through all legal means at its disposal. The Iranian envoy condemned the recent Israeli attack on Al-Aqsa Mosque, saying any desecration of Muslims' holy sites should not be tolerated. Amid ongoing Israeli aggression against Al-Aqsa in occupied Al-Quds, hundreds of activists have taken to London streets to mark annual Quds Day. The day has been a target of pro-Israel lobby attempts to ban the protest. Despite this, London organizers have succeeded in keeping the event going, preserving the legacy of Imam Khomeini. Robert Carter reports from London.
Hundreds of protesters flocked to central London on Sunday to honour the call of International Quds Day. The annual event, held on the last weekend of Ramadan, was initiated by the Islamic Republic of Iran in 1979 to express solidarity for Palestinians and staunch opposition to Zionism.
Israeli aggression against Palestinians during the holy month of Ramadan has become so regular that it's turned almost regrettably into an annual tradition. That's why tensions are so high this year, as continued aggression against the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound is ongoing even at the time of this recording.
Due to its popularity, many attempts have been made by pro-Israel groups to ban the rally, with critics citing anti-Semitism accusations. Event supporters, however, rubbished these claims.
The Al-Quds demonstration is in support of the Palestinians in their fight against Zionism. Zionism is a totally different philosophy to Judaism. Zionism is a false, secular philosophy. Judaism is an age-old religion. Being against Zionism is being against falsehood. Nothing to do with anti-Semitism at all.
The very fact that the protest movement is being criminalized and there are efforts to ban it, I think that speaks volumes. They don't want concepts of resistance to be spoken about. Like, I'm not sure if you realize in some of the protests, there's an emphasis on 1, 2, 3, 4, occupation no more, but not an emphasis on 5, 6, 7, 8, Israel is a terrorist state, right? It's like, we have solidarity with the oppressed Palestinians. We call out their victimhood, but we also target the aggressor.
The Al-Aqsa Mosque compound has been at the centre of weeks of heightened Israeli violence against Palestinian worshippers since the beginning of the holy month. With at least 19 Palestinians killed so far, fears remain high that another full-scale war could break out as Gaza's resistance threatens greater retaliation. Robert Carter, London.
A group of independent UN experts says the U.S. is making life worse for Afghan women by freezing billions of dollars worth of the country's assets. The statement was jointly issued by 14 experts appointed by the Geneva-based Human Rights Council. They said countries, including the U.S., are obliged by international laws to ensure that their activities do not result in rights violations. The experts noted that they have relayed their concerns and recommendations to Washington, but have not yet received a reply. The UN experts also blamed the ruling Taliban's, quote, widening gender-based discrimination for deteriorating women's rights. They said the current humanitarian crisis, where 23 million are relying on food aid, is having a disproportionate impact on women and children. Yemen says it's released the crew of a cargo ship called Rabi, which belongs to the United Arab Emirates and was seized in January. The spokesman of Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement said the vessel's 11-member crew was released through an agreement facilitated by Oman. Mohammed Abdus Salam said a detained British man was also released without providing more details. The Emirati vessel was captured in the Red Sea on January the 3rd. The Saudi-led coalition, which launched a war on Yemen in 2015, claims the ship carried medical equipment. Yemen says it was transporting military hardware. Earlier on Sunday, Yemen made a new offer to the coalition via the UN for the exchange of 200 prisoners from each warring side. And Yemenis have held a conference at the capital Sana'a to support the Palestinian cause and to call on the free people of the world to stand by the Palestinian people, especially amid the ongoing Israeli crimes. Abdul Latif al-Washili reports from Sana'a.
Amid the Israeli escalation against Palestinians, Yemenis have held a conference called Palestine, the Central Cause of the Nation, in the Yemeni capital Sana'a. Senior officials have participated in the event to express their support for Palestinians.
The conference was held in Sana'a, the capital, which represents a symbol of a steadfastness and resistance in the face of those who normalize relations with the Israeli enemy. The Yemeni people are a living example of free people, as the central issue for us is Palestine. If Yemen was still ruled by the previous regime, it would have been portrayed as having normalized relations with Israel. But praise be to God, the Yemeni people have been liberated.
Organizers said this conference is a preparation for the celebration of the International Quds Day, as Yemenis will fill the streets of Sana'a to prove their solidarity with the Palestinian cause.
This conference comes as part of preparations for marking Quds Day, which will be unprecedented this year, as the Yemeni people will come out to confirm that Palestine is the central issue of the nation. The message that we are sending through this conference is that the Yemeni people, with all their sects and components, insist that the Palestinian cause is the basis for the solution to all the problems facing the Islamic nation.
During the conference, the president of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, Mahdi al-Mashat, called for forming official and popular funds to support the Palestinian people and returning the Palestinian issue to the curricula to emphasize its importance for all generations. Despite everything that is currently happening in the world and the catastrophic situation in the country, people who say they will never forget the Palestinian cause, they say it is the time for the free people of the world to prove their support for Palestinians against ongoing Israeli crimes.
Well, that's your world news for now. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to the program. You may have heard of Hurr ibn Yazid Riyahi. He was the man who blocked the way to Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and forced the Imam and his caravan to encamp in the desert of Karbala. If Hurr had not done this, the events of Ashura might have occurred in a different way, and the family and relatives of Imam Hussein might have not been captivated. Yet, despite this flagrant mistake, there was something in Hurr which resulted in his salvation, namely, his politeness towards Imam Hussein's mother, Lady Fatima Zahra, greetings of God upon her. When Hurr and his thousand-strong hordes blocked Imam Hussein's way, the Imam said to Hurr, "May your mother mourn for your death. What do you want from us?" These words angered Hurr, but he felt shy to utter any evil word about the Imam's mother. Disrespect to Lady Fatima made him say to the Imam, "I would answer to anyone else who dared to call my mother's name, but I cannot speak except good about your mother." This modesty and politeness rescued Hur. On the day of Ashura, when thousands of Yazid hordes had besieged Imam Hussein and his family and relatives, Hur took off his boots and hanged them from his neck, held his shield upside down, and came to Imam Hussein with tears in his eyes. He was shivering as he wanted to repent and join the Imam's encampment. The Imam told him that God had accepted his penitence, so he fought the enemies and attained martyrdom in the way of God. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, says, "He who has no modesty has no faith." As a matter of fact, a person who is immodest does not feel shy to do anything or utter any word. For sure, he is not a faithful. Modesty and faith are so interlinked that Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, "Modesty is the whole religion." Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, "The best kind of modesty is to feel shy of your own self so that you do not take an evil step. Those who fast open the gates of divine teachings through controlling their mean desires. Thirst and hunger helps one overcome his self and causes spiritual forces to flourish. On the contrary, excessive eating and pleasures put out the light of thought and cognizance." One of the faithful called Ja'far ibn Muhammad ibn Hamza asked the 11th infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Hassan Askari, peace upon him, about the reason for obligation of fasting of Ramadan. The Imam answered, "Almighty God prescribed fasting so that the rich taste hunger and be kind toward the poor." The divine laws are not illogical and unwise, as God is wise. Thus, we obey God's commands whether we know the logic or not. Islam and being Muslim means submission before God's do's and don'ts. However, some of the logics of the deeds and laws are mentioned in the hadith and narrations. The Noble Quran says that fasting has been prescribed for reaching God-weariness. God-weary humans are like the trees and plants which grow in the desert. Such plants are tolerant against storms, scorching sun, and frosty winter. In the same way, fasting makes the spirit of the faithful strong against calamities. One cannot understand captivity unless he has been captive for a while. He cannot realize the sorrow of a bereaved one unless he loses a dear one. He won't understand the state of the poor unless he is hungry for a few hours. In addition to ample spiritual benefits, fasting is useful for health and well-being. Some people think that they should compensate for the weight they have lost during Ramadan. Researchers have revealed that decrease of the consumed daily calorie acts as an antioxidant and helps the functioning of the brain and body. In other words, the kind of food consumed is not an index of longevity, but the amount of food. Those who eat less live longer. The most key issue during fasting is to secure the water of body. It is very important to drink at least 2 liters of water from iftar till sahari. But it is better to drink this water in intervals. For instance, At the iftar, you can drink 500 milliliters. It is better to add one spoon of honey to the water. It is both energizing and helps killing bacteria and fungi. Meanwhile, eating dates is very useful, especially at the time of iftar. Dates are rich with multivitamins and minerals. Eating too much food will pressure the stomach and it will damage his sleep. The foods containing vegetables and fibers are good for iftar. As it has been said before, these foods help digestion of other foodstuffs. Salad and soup are also good for iftar and after it, but it should be noted that the dressing used on the salad is better to be low-fat. The foods containing carbohydrates can also be consumed between iftar and sahari. These include rice, macaroni, and bread, especially with the wheat, whose bran is not separated.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners. And since we are marking the grand night of Adr, on which God Almighty fixes destinies for the year to come, let us hear what the Commander of the Faithful and the Leader of the Pious, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, says about destiny. Each step one takes is a step towards one's destiny.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
Allah, ma'allah.
for humanity.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين. Welcome, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program For Humanity, and the segment we're dealing today with is Hollywood, Conditioning of the Subconscious Mind and Extermination of the Human Rights. This is Sheikh Ali Hemani from Qom. The discussion we had in our early episode was, who should we follow? We have two entities on two sides dictating their terms. On one side, we have Islam, which tells us what to do, what not to do, what to pick, what not to pick, halal and haram. On the other hand, we have the corporate world and the media telling us what to do, what not to do, and what to pick, what not to pick. And then we concluded that I rather follow the most knowledgeable and the most wise person rather than following the carnal desires of the corporate world and the media world. So an important element here is that as long as we try and associate ourselves and keep connected with this corporate world and the media world and allow them to influence our soul, our nafs, and our faculties, that is aql, that is logic, greed, and our anger, then we will always find ourselves subjected to their conditioning. And if we allow Islam to control these faculties, that is our aql, our greed, and our anger, then we will find ourselves submitting to the rules of Islam. Now here, there's a very fundamental question that when it comes to media, when it comes to Hollywood, the way we interact with media in Hollywood is through our digital devices, either through TV, either through mobile phones or computers or tablets. Now, some of you might question that, well, if we don't want to, or if we want to stay away from media, it literally means that we will have to stay away from technology. But let me try and help you understand that even the extensive use of your tablets, your digital devices, these are going to cause harm and alter our approach towards life. If you look at the psychological research, you would notice that there are functioning waves in our brain, alpha waves and beta waves. When we subject our children, when we subject our youth and teen to a lot of screen time, they watch TV, they watch tablets and mobile phones, the flickering of the mobile phone and the constant changing of the screen and the images on the mobile phone alters the brain waves of our children from alpha waves to beta waves and from beta waves to alpha waves. And that's why you will see their attention span goes down, their learning curve goes down. They become slow in learning. They need more time to grasp something. They're not able to constantly sit and read a book for 1 hour. They need a break after every 15 minutes. Why? Because their brain has been impacted by this altering and the flickering of the screen. Let me put it this way. What's the difference between reading through the media, that is our book media, the physical media, and reading through the digital media? That's a very fundamental question. So someone might say, okay, I don't want to use technology for watching movies and all that stuff. How about using technology for reading Quran? How about technology for reading books? Will that still impact my brain? Will that still impact my attention span? Will that still impact my understanding and make me a slow learner? Let's take a quick break here, come back, and I'll tell you the difference between using the physical media, that is book, and using the digital media, and how even this contributes in our functioning of the brain and the choices we make.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program For Humanity. We were talking about the usage of physical media like books, storybooks, and drawing books for our children, and compared to that, using media and technology for teaching stuff to our children. Now, this is related to our discussion in a way that how the corporate world and the media has brought this digital assets in the hands, right into the hands of our children who are just 6 months old. And right from that age, how they're influencing the brain waves of our children, how they're influencing the learning skills of our children, how they're influencing the free will and the free choice of our children. So if you understand the functioning of the eye, when you're trying to read something from the physical book, what really happens is that the light emitted from sun or any light source, let's say a bulb in your house, right? So light reflects on the book and then enters your eye, goes through the iris, hits the retina, and your brain registers the data from that book because the light is being reflected from the book in your eye. This way, the eye is not subjected to strain. The eye is only capturing the reflection from the book. But when you're looking at the screen directly, then the LEDs behind the screen are emitting light. So the light is not being reflected from another page or from another object, but it is directly entering our eyes through the iris and hitting the retina. And that is why when children sit down to watch TV for an hour or 2 hours, at the end of the program, even though it was entertaining, you find our children tired, lethargic, not interested, not feeling hungry, feeling nauseatic, and not interested in studying. Why? Because their brain is overloaded with direct emission of light. The flickering of the screen, the flickering at 60 hertz, the flickering at 90 hertz, flickering at 120 hertz, and direct impact of the light on our retina makes our eyes dull. And that's why you will see, if you run a quick statistics about the children, you will see a lot of children are now facing poor eyesight, weak eyes, and they're being subjected to wearing either lenses, contact lenses, and glasses so that they can study properly. And this also affects the cognitive skills, their ability to understand and the cognitive ability to comprehend the content that are being presented. When it comes to book, when the child is holding the book, it also involves motor skills, holding onto something, turning pages, and reading the material, and physical activity involved. But when someone is reading through media, sitting and watching TV, sitting and watching cartoons, there's barely any motor skills involved. And it just makes the person extremely tired. So this is an inherent problem to the technology that we are dealing today. So I'm not saying that don't give your children technology, don't give them tablets, don't give them mobile phones, don't give them anything. I'm saying give it to them in a controlled manner. Give it to them for a limited duration of time. Give it to them to the extent of their age. If a child is 4 years old, give it to him for 20 minutes in a day. That's more than enough for a child who's 4 years old. If your son is a teenager, he's 15 years old, give it to him for 2 hours in a day, not more than that, because it is going to affect his learning ability, his learning skills, his learning curve, and his comprehension skills. Inshallah, we'll continue in the next episode. Until then, fi amanillah, God bless you all. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله 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 صل على محمد وآله
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
Iran's National Museum is displaying a collection of artifacts that was stolen decades ago but has finally returned home after a long legal battle. The items, which include sacred figurines, pots and jars, date back to more than 3,000 years ago. They were stolen and sent to the West more than four decades ago. In 1991, the British Museum was seeking to buy the collection from a smuggler residing in Switzerland. The objects, however, were seized by Swiss police and revealed in court in 2008. Since then, Iran had been trying to get the stolen treasures back home.
Under pressure from the Iranian diplomatic apparatus and the official complaints of the National Museum in 2015, the legal process continued and finally on December 20, 2020, the collection returned to us.
The collection belongs to the northwestern city of Bukhan, which was the home of Manians around the 10th to 7th centuries BC. The Manians were one of the first nomadic tribes to build cities in that area. The director of Iran's National Museum says the effort to recover other stolen artifacts continues. The country is now holding talks with the U.S. and Australia to return ancient objects smuggled over there.
Japanese researchers have developed chopsticks that artificially create the taste of salt. They have done this as part of efforts to reduce high levels of sodium intake in Japan. The utensils look like a typical pair of chopsticks, but with a cable and a mini computer worn on the person's wrist. A mild electrical current transmits sodium ions from food through the chopsticks and into the user's mouth. This enhances the taste of salt, requiring less of it in food to achieve the same good taste.
To prevent severe lifestyle-related diseases or to prevent these diseases altogether, we need to reduce the amount of salt we take regularly. Japanese people tend to ingest a large amount of salt in their diet. If we try to avoid taking less salt in a conventional way, we would need to endure cutting out our favorite foods from our diet or endure eating bland food.
The chopsticks have already been clinically tested. Participants say the device enhanced salty taste of low-sodium food by roughly 1.5 times. The engineers are currently refining the chopsticks and hope to commercialize the product next year. The product was jointly developed by Meiji University professor Homei Miyashita and a beverage holding company. Miyashita is best known for his creation of a TV screen that can imitate various flavors. How long could you work at your job? In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do. And there, you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here, and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Ortman says his secret to a long life and Breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Othman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity.
Agriculture is no exception when it comes to adapting new technologies in the context of changing climate. Now, French farmers in the northwestern suburbs of Paris grow greens in any season using hydroponic farms. Residents of a housing estate have ditched the traditional way of farming to create jobs for their community. Hydroponic farming is a method of growing plants in water, not in soil. It may sound like it would be a complicated process, but it's actually quite straightforward. The system is made of plastic and uses a rich organic ecosystem. The workers use less water than usual and do not even need a teaspoon of soil. One of the employees describes how they turn barren land into a farm.
It used to be a garage where they stored cars, but since there were no more cars, we used it as a dormitory. We listened to music and watched football matches. We used to meet here to have a bit of privacy and breathe, to hide away for a while. But now that it's become a place of work, I'm happy because I'm working.
Hydroponic farms can be used to grow products of all kinds in any region. In this one, farmers are planting all sorts of things, ranging from Peruvian mint to Vietnamese coriander. They hope that the system can be used to help local residents, especially those who need it the most.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Magic returns to Belgium with a purple carpet of bluebells covering the undergrowth of Hallerbos woods near Brussels. Each spring, this beech forest turns into a bluebell spectacular, turning the area into a natural wonderland. Millions of these blooming flowers sprout up across the 550-hectare woods, filling the air with their sweet aroma. The short but enchanting blooming phase offers nature enthusiasts a one-of-a-kind experience.
It is an outstanding and magical place because whenever we come, there's an amazing atmosphere. The sunrise was truly beautiful this morning, and we know this offers the opportunity to take great photos and decorate our house. It is a great comfort during these tough times.
Visitors can stroll the winding paths and watch rabbits and deer wandering through the woods. The forest floor blooms for a period of 7 to 10 days. After this time, leaves begin to grow on the trees above them, blocking the sunlight from reaching the flowers. The phenomenon of bluebell forest is not uncommon in Europe, but the Hallerbos greenery is unique for the density and beauty of its blossoms. A huge pink moon has glowed over Chilean skies, mesmerizing stargazers and ordinary citizens alike. The full moon was completely visible over the capital, Santiago. The celestial phenomenon is called a pink moon as it appears in April and is named after an American plant, pink plot, that blooms in spring. The pink moon will shine during the weekend through early Monday and may be visible in most parts of the world. The phenomenon also marks the calendar for different religious festivities around the globe.
A A batch of autonomous delivery vehicles has been provided to facilitate personnel and volunteers in the streets and communities of Shanghai. The self-driving vehicles distribute supplies to residents in the Chinese megacity, which is now hit hard by the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. The vehicles reduce person-to-person contact and largely lower the risk of infection. A community served by the distribution station has more than 30 apartment buildings and nearly 3,000 residents. The weight of each order is more than 5 kilograms, which puts great pressure on the volunteers to deliver. 49 autonomous delivery vehicles have been sent to communities, colleges, and hospitals in Shanghai to support anti-pandemic and supply work. Sunny skies and spring temperatures made for the perfect setting for the 65th birthday of Fatu, the world's oldest gorilla living at Berlin Zoo. At this age, the Western Lowland gorilla is what Berlin Zoo calls almost something of a legend. Gorillas living in the wild have a life expectancy of about 40 years, and at 65, she has been the world's oldest living gorilla for a while. 65 is absolutely extraordinary, and that obviously needs to be celebrated in style.
They mainly get vegetables, and the sugar they receive at most is fruit sugar, and that's what she saw for today in the shape of raspberries and blueberries. They were the decoration on rice cake made of boiled rice, a thin layer of rice and some curd so it sticks together. The bottom was made of a lot of green stuff, then the lion and lettuce.
According to Berlin Zoo, Western Lowland gorillas are now an endangered species after their natural habitat was continuously decimated, and therefore fewer and fewer animals live in the tropical rainforest of Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo. World of Opera is opening its doors to the deaf community for the very first time. The Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra has teamed up with the Deaf West Theater to stage a production of Beethoven's only opera, Fidelio, at their home at the Walt Disney Hall. The chorus will be performed by the White Hands Choir, a group from Venezuela consisting of disabled children and young adults who sing as well as sign. The production pairs up a singer and a deaf actor to both inhabit the one role on stage. Having deaf actors perform alongside opera singers, however, has its challenges, not least of which is keeping up the rhythm of the music.
I think probably that there's a lot of tempo that I've been rehearsing. A lot of times when the singers hold the same word, but the next time they say that exact same word in the next few bars, they don't hold it as long. So trying to remember all of those is very difficult. So are they holding this for four beats or two beats? Or what word is this in this thing?
I feel like the challenge with opera is that it's very fluid and it's not repetitive. The tempos change throughout it, and night to night it even changes. The conductor, you know, kind of changes how he conducts things each night, and so that is something that is challenging.
The opera singers also give small cues to the actors, like opening a letter or sitting down or standing up, to keep them informed where they are in the piece. The deaf cast use theatrical ASL, or American Sign Language, in the production. DJ Kurse, the producer at the Deaf West Theater, says the performance is a little bit more poetic and a little bit more kind of picturesque.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Amid the ongoing global inflation crisis, NATO heads of state and mainstream media repeat a mantra that high energy prices are a direct result of Putin's actions in Ukraine since end of February. The reality is that it is the Western sanctions that are responsible. Those sanctions including cutting SWIFT interbank access for key Russian banks and some of the most severe sanctions ever imposed are hardly having an impact on the military actions in Ukraine. What many overlook is the fact that they are increasingly impacting the economies of the West, especially the EU and USA. A closer look at the state of the global supply of diesel fuel is alarming, but Western sanctions planners at the US Treasury and the EU know fully well what they are doing, and it bodes ill for the world economy. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article penned by F. William Engdahl, a university lecturer and best-selling author on oil and geopolitics. The piece is titled NATO Sanctions and the Coming Global Diesel Fuel Disaster. Stay tuned for more. While most of us rarely think about diesel fuel as anything other than a pollutant, in fact, it is essential to the entire world economy in a way few energy sources are. The Director General of the Fuels Europe, part of the European Petroleum Refiners Association, stated recently, "There is a clear link between diesel and GDP, because almost everything that goes into and out of a factory goes using diesel." At the end of the first week of Russia's military action in Ukraine, with no sanctions yet specific to Russia's diesel fuel exports, the European diesel price was already at a 30-year high. It had nothing to do with war. It had to do with the draconian global COVID lockdown since March 2020 and the simultaneous disinvestment by Wall Street and global financial firms in oil and gas companies, so-called Green Agenda or ESG. Almost on day one of Russian troop actions in Ukraine, two of the world's largest oil companies, BP and Shell, both British, stopped deliveries of diesel fuel to Germany, claiming fear of supply shortages. Russia supplied some 60 to 70% of all EU diesel before the Ukraine crisis. In 2020, Russia was the world's second largest exporter of diesel fuel behind USA, shipping more than 1 million barrels daily. Most of it, some 70%, went to the EU and Turkey. France was the largest importer, followed by Germany and UK. In France, some 76% of all road vehicles, including cars, trucks, use diesel. The EU diesel demand is far higher than in the US, as most cars also use the more economical and efficient diesel fuel. In the first week of April, the EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen proudly announced new sanctions against Russian energy that would begin with a ban on coal. The EU is the largest importer of Russian coal. Oil and gas, she said, would follow at a later date. That foolish move will merely boost the cost of energy already at record high for most of the EU, as it will force oil and gas prices far higher. At the beginning of the Ukraine crisis, global stocks of diesel fuel were already the lowest since 2008, as the COVID lockdowns had done major damage to the demand-supply situation of oil and gas production. Now the stage is set for an unprecedented crisis in diesel. The consequences will be staggering for the world economy. Diesel engines have the highest engine efficiency of conventional motors. They are based on the principle of compression developed in 1897 by Rudolf Diesel. Because of their greater efficiency and greater mileage per gallon, diesel fuels almost all freight truck motors. It fuels most all farm equipment from tractors to harvesting machines. It is widely used in the EU, almost 50% for auto fuel, as it is far more fuel efficient than gasoline engines. It is used in most all heavy mining machines, such as Caterpillar earth movers. It is used in construction equipment. Diesel engines have replaced steam engines on all non-electrified railroads in the world, especially freight trains. Diesel is used in some electric power generation and in most all heavy military vehicles. A global shortage in diesel fuel, temporary or longer term, is therefore a catastrophic event. Goods cannot be moved from container ports to inland destinations. Without diesel fuel, trucks cannot deliver food to the supermarket or anything else for that matter. The entire supply chain is frozen, and there is no possibility to substitute gasoline in a diesel engine without